You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, FASD, is a neural disability caused by prenatal alcohol exposure, which can affect memory, intellectual ability, and emotional regulation. The Ministry of Health estimates that between 3 to 5% of the population in Aotearoa are affected by FASD, with around 1,800 to 3,000 babies being born with FASD each year. The government has recently announced it will be establishing new guidelines to help health professionals diagnose FASD, introducing a program to support families, and launching a FASD prevention campaign. First, I spoke to Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Care Action Network, FASDCAN, Chairperson Lee Henderson. FASDCAN is a non-profit incorporated society made up of parents, caregivers, extended whānau and professionals. I spoke to Henderson about how the government can better support those with FASD, and we started off our interview discussing what difference Henderson believes the government's proposed initiatives will make. Here is that interview.
It's important to have improved diagnostic capacity. It means that you can understand the person as to whether their behaviour is due to that brain impairment. It stops that blame culture about poor parenting, but also provides some understanding when you interact with professionals, whether it may be justice or education or mental health or other areas, that they can understand that that person is suffering, has a disability, and that's why they are as they are. So diagnosis is really important. Obviously prevention is very important as well. We have a high level of unplanned pregnancies in New Zealand, and we would like to significantly reduce the number of those that are alcohol exposed. But perhaps the most important part of the announcement is the reactivation of the action plan, which was set up and started 8 years ago now. It was a three-year action plan. It identified areas that needed to change in New Zealand to support those with the FASD. And while some of the work has been done, it hasn't been well funded. It hasn't really been coordinated across the agencies because FASD impacts so many agencies: health, mental health, disability, education, corrections, youth, and it really requires a concerted effort to try to change the impacts and effects on the individuals and society of this disorder. So we're hopeful that the commitment from Dr. Reti and his ministry to take this seriously will make some progress. Progress has been extremely slow and disappointing in some aspects.
What issues do you perceive there being with the current clinical diagnostic process of children with FASD?
It's been very hard to access. Some of our families report having tried to get diagnosis since their child was two, not getting until they were 9 years old. Some, in fact, don't get them until teenage years. There's a lot of advocacy that goes on, and resources are restricted because there's only a few clinics, and many of those have been somewhat committed to looking at children that are entering care, because 50% of children entering care are thought to have FASD, or those that are entering the justice system, and occasionally because of behavioural concerns through the education system. But otherwise families are having to resort, if they are very well off, to pay for private diagnosis, up to $9,000 a time. So access to more diagnostic capacity is really important.
Then why is diagnosis so important, and when is the best time in a child's life to be able to be diagnosed? Does it make a difference if it's earlier on?
Early intervention is critical. The earlier that you know you've got a person with FASD, the more likely you are to provide supports to them around education in particular. And some of that protection work, the children can be very vulnerable. So, you know, you may alter your parenting to accommodate them, not to use, you know, things like tough love because they do not understand consequences, but using a completely different parenting style that takes account of their brain-based disability. But, of course, this is a very variable disorder. And for some, it may be obvious even from birth occasionally. Occasionally, there's the facial features that are associated with FASD for over 90%. It will be other things that start to drive a concern. And unfortunately for some, that may not happen until teenage years or even adulthood. And those are stages where you're less likely to be able to mitigate the risk of the adverse effects because you haven't had early intervention. So the sooner the better.
In terms of a national action campaign, what would you like to see that focus on in particular?
Well, the first thing that we think is essential is to provide disability support for people with FASD, just as you can get for physical disabilities and some neurodisabilities. That would allow people to be able to have teacher aids, it would be able them to have respite care, it would be able to put in place all of the structure around those children to stop some of those secondary effects of mental health effects and school exclusion and so on. So disability support is the main one, but the second part of it is professional training. And over the past few years, there's been an increase in awareness of FASD, but that does not equate to understanding. And this syndrome, this spectrum disorder affects right across so many different portfolios, but police, justice, appearing before courts, understanding that a brain is critical to actually providing the best environment for that person. And so professional training is critical at the moment. We are providing some of that training. We've provided training to judges. We've provided training to education professionals. We've provided training to social workers, care workers, and so on. But it needs to be a coordinated and funded approach. And at the moment, what we are doing is done mainly without any government funding. We're using charity. We're using philanthropic sources to actually do that. And it's very difficult to be able to reach the professionals that need to be reached.
Was there anything that wasn't included in the government's announcement that you would like to see when it comes to supporting people and families with FASD and raising awareness?
That's a very good question, because really there is no detail in that announcement. They've said that they will review the progress and identify gaps in the progress. So what we don't know is what that will mean, but particularly what it will mean in terms of an organisation such as ours, in terms of the need for funding, just as you get funding for Autism New Zealand and other organisations, to actually be able to ensure that we can continue to support families who are living with people with this disorder. Yesterday there was an announcement from the new Minister for Disability on a review of disability support. We welcome that because we're hopeful that that will mean an increase in funding, because we think it's essential to increase funding both at the family level and at the Paikaha Ministry for Disabled People. But we have one reservation about that, and that is that for many years now, there has been advocacy to uphold the rights of people with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder in New Zealand. It's been the rights have been upheld by the United Nations in their review of New Zealand's compliance with the Convention on the Rights of Disabled People. And the announcement yesterday said they would address eligibility for services. It feels to me that could constitute treading water, that we were hopeful that the work that PICAR has already started on eligibility would mean that sometime before too long we would get some outcome from that. And it just feels like this could be a step that will stall that progression. And our families are in distress, they need support, and further investigation and perhaps going back to square one will not help those families.
I also spoke to clinical neuropsychologist and clinical director of the FASD Centre Aotearoa, Dr. Valerie McGinn. The FASD Centre Aotearoa assesses and helps with the management of children, young people and adults with FASD. I started off our interview by asking Dr. McGinn for her thoughts on the government's announcement.
They have said that they'll train 30 diagnosticians within the district health boards, I presume within the child development centres, to recognise and diagnose FASD, which will be a very good thing, because currently many children with FASD, or most children, are sort of slipping through the cracks, and they really only come to our attention when things have gone horribly wrong. So it would be very good if we could get diagnosis at a younger age and services in place. I guess the problem is that the Ministry of Health specifically exclude people with FASD from disability support services. So that's still a problem that remains and hasn't been rectified. So one thing is to get a diagnosis and understand what's going on, and that will help families know how to manage a child who may have difficulties, but it doesn't really provide extra support for them as they should be entitled to with a disability. There's no other disability specifically excluded from disability support services, and as far as I know, New Zealand's the only country in the world that specifically discriminate against people with FASD in that way.
Yeah, so speaking of that, the government has announced a review into disability support services. Do you have any concerns about this, or what would you like to see from this review?
Well, I think that, you know, this has been a long-term problem. It's not as if it's one government that's failed to address this. Multiple governments have failed to address it. So I guess I would like FASD at least to be on the same footing, say, as ASD and other, that's autism spectrum disorder and other disabilities. But in saying that, you know, all the disabilities are very lightly funded, but with FASD in particular, the cost to the individual and society is huge, because we know that when there aren't services in place, these young people go on into the criminal justice system, and that's because it's not because they're bad people, because they're not at all. It's because they behave inappropriately, and that's not recognised as a symptom of their disability. So they get caught up in the criminal justice system, and that puts them on a kind of escalator towards, multiple problems that are actually very expensive to rectify if you leave it until later in life. So a lot of costs. Savings could be made by putting resources in at an earlier age.
Is there anything else that you would like to see from the government to support those with FASD, or to support organisations that support those with FASD?
Well, I think currently FASD CAN, which is FASD Care Action Network, which is our agency charity that is there to been set up to support families and individuals with FASD. I was a founding member of that organisation, you know, has not been funded in the same way as other organisations that support other disabilities. And so, you know, there's so much that can be done, but there's really no funding to do it beyond a group of very dedicated and expert parents and caregivers. So, you know, that certainly needs bolstering up. And, you know, all of our social services need training and health services to understand what FASD is, so that can be recognised at a young age and can be accommodated. And I guess, you know, we do know what works and what to do, but we've just never really been given the funding to this particular disability. And I think there's more people with FASD than any other disability. So, you know, a prevention campaign we've had in the past, and that's all good, but we're not ever... And drinking has reduced significantly. I think our young people coming through are much more sensible about, you know, not drinking to excess. But nevertheless, we also have a generation of young adults and adults who need support right now because they face multiple adversities. So, of course, we also want, you know, it to be known in the wider public that drinking in pregnancy has, you know, serious risks associated with it.
Yeah, so specifically from a prevention campaign, what would you like to see in that?
You know, if we look to Canada, which is where we always look to because they're so advanced compared to New Zealand, it's not just that there's a campaign around, you know, don't drink. There needs to be much wider recognition that alcohol harm in New Zealand and drinking is a problem that crosses all sectors of society, and it's not fair or even sensible to attribute this to women who drink, because they drink alongside men and alongside aunties and nans. So, you know, drinking is a widespread problem in New Zealand, so we need to, I think, look at our whole alcohol culture and protect the mums and protect the babies so that they can go on to, you know, have a full life without a disability. So, like in Canada, everyone knows what FASD is, but in New Zealand, there's a whole health service that don't know what FASD is, and our parents, who've become expert through having to learn what to do, are ending up going into their GP or even, you know, to see a psychiatrist or to see mental health workers, and they're having to inform them about what FASD is because the health workforce is not considered as important, you know, just due to lack of training and ignorance, and maybe also in some cases the health professionals' own drinking habits, which also enter into the equation. You know, one thing that I hope comes out of this, you know, drinking is not an Indigenous problem. It's not a problem particular to Maori. But, you know, Maori do have really good models of health and wellness that, you know, really can be very effectively applied to caring for and looking after individuals with FASD. So I think, you know, bolstering that aspect of the workforce, handing resources over to iwi to address these problems. I'm not saying it's only their problem, because it's not. I mean, the largest group of drinkers are actually in pregnancy, a professional woman. But there is, you know, binge drinking and all sorts of issues with colonisation. So I think, you know, resources are needed across the board, but particularly to our Maori organisations who do have the right models to know how to work with this issue.
To hear from a person with FASD, I spoke to Byron, a young adult, about his experience with FASD and what support he would like to see from the government. Can you just tell our listeners what your experience was like being diagnosed with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder?
My experience is a bit of a mixed experience, to be honest. I wasn't too keen to learn much about it until a couple of years back. For quite a while, I was aware that I had it and sort of understood how it played a part in my life, you know, in different situations. I wasn't really that keen to acknowledge it and address it.
Yeah, if you feel comfortable, could you talk a little bit about why you might not have felt comfortable to get that diagnosis?
Yeah, I think the reason for that was I didn't want to put a label on it. I didn't want to think of myself as disabled or different or some, or, you know, any kind of stigma about it. But up until a couple of years ago, when I connected with FASCAN and met other individuals with FASD, I'm actually, I accept it as you know, it's part of me, it's who I am, and it doesn't define me.
And since receiving your diagnosis, what has your experience been like?
I'd have to say, yeah, it's a pretty mixed experience in terms of when I announce it to clinicians or GPs or other healthcare professionals. Usually they aren't very educated about FASD. I usually have to give them a quick, you know, crash course on what FASD is and just guide them to the FASCAN New Zealand website to get more information.
So the government has announced that we'll be establishing new guidelines to help health professionals better recognise and diagnose FASD. What do you think about this and what would you like to see included in those guidelines?
Yeah, I think they've still got a long way to go as most of the healthcare sector isn't aware of FASD or its effects. That includes the justice sector as well, police and the courts. They're still really undereducated on FASD and how that affects the individuals who have it. I think it's really great that they've made this announcement, but FASCAN New Zealand has already been training professionals and different types of professionals for quite a while now.
Yeah, and getting that diagnosis, have you found that that's made it easier for you in any way to go about life and do the things that you want to do?
I think it's helpful. It's helpful to know, to remember when I'm struggling with something that actually, you know, I don't need to be too hard on myself, and my brain does work differently than other people, but it doesn't set any limitations on what I can achieve. You know, in fact, it can be the opposite. If you're motivated enough, having FASD can not even be a barrier to trying to achieve your goals. It can actually help because you're really motivated to overcome your barriers and your challenges.
Is there anything that you would like to see from the government to support those with FASD or organisations that support those with FASD?
Yeah, I think it's critical that the government recognises FASD as a full disability with ACC. So it's recognised as a full disability with ACC and by the government. At the moment, it's incredibly hard to access even a disability allowance, let alone a disability benefit for FASD. I know from personal experience I've had to go through great lengths just to try and get some of that assistance from them.
Is there anything that you want people to know about FASD or maybe a misconception about FASD that people have?
Probably just that we're all human beings, just like everyone else. Our brains just work slightly differently, and if people took the time to learn a little bit about FASD, they would know that all these individuals need is just that little bit of extra support, compassion and understanding. They're making it nearly impossible to access this any assistance at the moment for people with FASD. I was lucky enough to have support from a mentor, like an advocate mentor service, and my parents. But I think of individuals who are living on their own, they would find it impossible to jump through the hoops that MSD is asking people to do in order to get this disability allowance or any sort of assistance.
The government has also announced a review into disability support services. I spoke to leader of Kickback Make Change, Aaron Hendry, a non-profit organisation serving rangatahi experiencing homelessness, about support needed for young people who have disabilities, including FASD, who are facing homelessness. Here is that interview.
It's really important that the review is done and that we have a really look at where the gaps are for, you know, specifically, you know, for our young people. And that the resources and the support is put into ensuring that we are able to best serve our community well.
What challenges do you see people with disabilities facing that the government could do more to address?
Yeah, like one of the big intersections we see and a real concern that many of us in the sector have is our young people with FASD. You know, right now, if you've got FASD and you're a young person, there's a real lack of services and supports available for you and a lack of recognition within, I guess, you know, disability services. to really respond to that and to provide the support for that. And so we see a lot of young people that, you know, have FASD, who are sleeping rough, who don't have the support they need. You know, when we look at the services that we have available for young people experiencing homelessness, there's already a lot of gaps. And then when we look at the support we need to really care well for young people who have FASD, we just don't have the services that exist to do, you know, the long-term journey that those young people need into adulthood, to provide them with the support to ensure that they're going to be cared for and supported and healthy and well.
The government has also announced some new measures that they're going to introduce to support those with FASD, including some diagnostic guidelines for health professionals to be able to better diagnose FASD, a prevention campaign and a support kind of group for people with FASD and their families. What do you make of these measures, and what further support would you like to see from the government to support those with FASD?
Yeah, I mean, even more ease of access to the diagnosis is great. You know, ensuring that we have much better education in the community is also really important. So, you know, those are good things. One of my real concerns is how we are going to care for young people that have FASD and are, for whatever reason, not able to live at home. How do we provide them with the support and service they need? So, you know, right now, you know, we have a lot of conversation around young people and, you know, crime and justice and all of that, and we know that, you know, some of our young people that are going in through the justice system have FASD. Some of the driving factors to them kind of being involved and causing harm in the community was, you know, alongside the disability, trauma, lack of safe or stable places to live, funneled into the justice system. They come out again, you know, again, they're still without a secure space to stay. They don't have the community or support around them, and they're straight back into the justice system. And so, you know, we've got to disrupt that pipeline, and it really looks like ensuring we have long-term sustainable care packages for these young people. So, one, they're not going through that experience of having to sleep on our streets as children with a disability. They have, you know, actual housing services that can be equipped to support them, but also long-term, that there is a sustainable support package for those children who are going to grow up into young people who grow up into adults, and ensuring that they get the support they need over a lifetime to be adequately cared for. One of my fears, really, young people that I have known, loved and cared for in various services is knowing that maybe we've been able to put something around them for, you know, a couple of years, but, you know, they're going to grow up and we don't have the supports in place long term to ensure that they are going to live healthy, thriving lives. And so I think we really need to take seriously the challenge we're facing there and ensure there is adequate investment into ensuring that these children get the support that they need.
What are your thoughts on the government's approach so far to young people who may be causing harm?
Yeah, I want to be clear, it's not just this government. I think, you know, within our, for a long time, we have found it far easier to focus on sort of very simplistic, tough-on-crime narratives while ignoring what we know is actually happening in our communities. And one of the things that is actually happening is that we have children with disabilities, such as FASD and others, children with extreme severe trauma, children living without stable accommodation, experiencing homelessness, who are then, because of all of those factors, getting involved in, you know, harmful behaviour in our communities, being funneled into the justice system, being chucked back out on the other side. And so I think we have to start taking these things seriously. If we want to change what's going on in our communities, then we need to deal with reality. We need to deal with what's really happening. And so right now, we're kind of talking about criminalizing children who have a disability and punishing young people who, you know, in some cases, don't have the brain development to be making healthy, safe choices when they're in situations which are really, you know, extreme and unsafe, situations that you and I wouldn't want to be in, and might make similar decisions if we were. And so I think we need to deal with that. We need to acknowledge that, and we need to have a response that is adequate to the challenge.
Many of these children who will be affected are in state care, and the government is also looking into the oversight of Oranga Tamariki. What would you like to see from this?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, is that, you know, if you're a child and you are in state care, but basically and effectively, the government is your parent, you know, you're a ward of the state, and so your state parent has responsibility for you. And, you know, currently and historically, our state parent hasn't done all that it could do to ensure the safety of its children. Instead, we focus very much on punishing these children when, you know, when they make poor decisions and cause harm after we've already made some very poor decisions and caused harm to them. And so we need to take that responsibility really seriously. Our government represents us, and so that means that we have parental responsibility over these children. And we need to start thinking, what would I expect for my own kids? What would I want for my own kids? What resources do I want? And I think every one of us would think we want our children to have the support they need to live well. We want them to live in safe, stable homes. We want them to have supportive and caring and loving people around them, and to be able to get health care and support and food and, you know, all those basic things that we want for our own kids, we need to start thinking about for these children, because it's exactly the same thing. In terms of the oversight bill, look, I applaud the government on sort of listening to the sector and having another look at that. There were some real concerns around the monitoring system being in a government department, and it's good to hear that it's going to be sort of pulled out of that and made an independent Crown agency. That real independence is really vital. It's really important, and we've heard that really clearly from the care experience community. So I think that's really good, and hopefully, you know, I think the other side of that, we need to make sure that the monitoring system continues to get really well resourced, so that we can be ensuring that our young people's voices are both heard and listened to. And especially when we're thinking about young people that have disabilities that are in the care system, you know, there's a lot of work there to understand that experience and to ensure that we are, you know, monitoring what's happening there really well. Like, I think ultimately, whenever we have conversations around young people at the moment, you know, we use these terms like young offenders or, you know, criminals and all of that, and it just obscures the reality. And the reality here in Aotearoa is that we have a group of children that have grown up with some really, really terrible living situations, you know, have experienced some really extreme trauma and are going through some really hard stuff. And, you know, some of these young people have disabilities, and some of these young people are living without the sort of support that we would want for ourselves, let alone for our own children. And I think we need to think about that a bit more as we look to evaluate the systems and services and structures that we are designing to care for them, to ensure that actually we are providing what these children need to thrive.
That was Fazd Khan, Chairperson Lee Henderson, Clinical Neuropsychologist and Clinical Director of the FASD Centre Aotearoa, Dr. Valerie McGinn, Leader of Kickback Make Change,
Aaron Hendry,
and Byron, a young person with FASD, on the government's disability policies.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.